You're listening to Conversations with Richard Feidler. On air, online, and podcast.
On Saturday night, I had this seriously weird experience. I went on stage to perform a one-man play for just one night. The play was called White Rabbits, Red Rabbits. There were no rehearsals. On Saturday night, I arrived at the theatre, I was introduced to the audience, and I walked on stage, and that's when I was given the script. It was the first time I'd seen it. The writer of the play, White Rabbit, Red Rabbit, insists that a different person should perform it every time, and that the performer should discover what's in the play at the same time as the audience does. Now, I don't want to give much away about the play, except to say it was the blackest kind of comedy about control and violence and trust. The author of White Rabbit, Red Rabbit is Nassim Suleimanpour. Nassim lives in Iran. His first language is Persian, but he wrote the play in English. It's been difficult for Nassim to travel outside of Iran, so the play has become like a message in a bottle from him to the outside world. And it worked. White Rabbit, Red Rabbit's been performed in New York, in London, Canada, all over the world. Nassim asks that a seat in the audience be kept empty in his absence. But on Saturday night, it was different, because Nassim Suleimanpour was actually in the audience. It's the first time Nassim has ever travelled outside of Iran, and I am so glad he's here today. Hi, Nassim.
Hello.
First of all, congratulations. Like I said, I was discovering the play at the same time the audience was, and I was kind of distracted how brilliant it was while I was trying to actually keep the show on the road. So congratulations. The play is masterful.
Thank you. I guess I'll take it.
I want you to know, I'm a guy that really over-prepares for things. I prepare too much normally for things. So I was super nervous backstage. Did you want me, as your performer, to feel that terror?
I think so, because I guess that's part of the theme of the play. And meanwhile, I mean, in my own personal experience of theater, I think we theater makers are more into theater because of the beautiness of rehearsals. So I always thought it's good to share it, you know, when an actor is just doing his role for the first time, he's fresh, he's bad at it. Of course, you were not. I mean, you did a great job.
Thank you. It's very kind.
But yeah, this is how I look at it.
My moments, I think. It was really quite terrifying to do it. I don't think I've ever been so nervous before going on stage. Not since I was a kid, I don't think. I thought I had to trust you. You wanted me to. You wanted me to trust you. I had to trust you.
Yeah, I mean, you did it, and even for me, I mean, you say that it was like you were maybe, I don't know, freaked out, but it was hard to recognize it, you know, which was somehow a kind of, it was shining. People even, you know, doubt if, have you read it before? Which is like kind of cute, you know.
You were born just before, just after the Iranian Revolution of 1979. Tell me which part of Iran that you grew up in.
I was born in Shiraz. You know it because of the wine.
And certainly
then,
do.
Yeah. And then delicious, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I moved to Tehran, which is the capital of Iran, to study. So this is where I live right now.
Can you describe Shiraz for me? I just was checking it out on the internet, and it looks kind of amazing.
What did you found on the internet?
Well, I got a quote here. Shiraz, this is the quote it says, Shiraz is called a city of roses and nightingales, the city of poets and philosophers, the city of warriors and kings, orchards and orange groves, Adonises and fragrant blossoms.
Yeah, I would just insist and say sour orange trees.
Sour orange.
Yeah, it's like you have to smell it. I mean, it's all in the air. It's so beautiful. I don't know if it is polite to say somehow Shirazian people are a bit lazy in a good way, which is somehow similar to what's going on here, I guess.
Laid back. We like the term laid back.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
Your father was a writer. Was your house full of books?
My father's house, you mean? Yeah, it's not mine.
Not yours. Why not? Why not yours?
I've just sold all the books I had.
Why?
Because I decided to read in English.
Really?
Yeah, because I want to write in English. Which, as I said, you know, in the play, is so hard for me to do.
How is it your English is so good?
I mean, is it?
Yes, it's excellent. It's excellent.
So it's really great to hear it. I mean, I'm just of just my parents. They put me through in this program when I was like 8 years old, and then it was good. But then later I thought I have to go back and study myself. So I just watch movies and then take notes, and then this is, I guess, part of my life and my job. Yeah.
When you went to university in Iran, what did you study?
At the beginning, I was a student of telecommunicating, kind of engineering. And then I quit. And then I studied in drama at University of Tehran.
Why? Why did you choose to change?
Because it was stupid. We were calculating and we were trying to have, I mean, to come to the same conclusion, like a number, which was kind of, to me, was stupid. I kind of like it. I say, okay, the answer is 4, but somebody says 6, and then we agree on it, you know?
But why drama? Why change to drama?
Yeah. I mean, my father, as you said, was a novelist. And then I used to be a poet. So both were spoiled. So I thought I'm going to go and study drama.
How does someone like you normally, or anyone in Iran, normally get a play approved and produced for performance?
Wise question. We have this center named DAC, Dramatic Arts Center, which is so-called the responsible for theater in Iran. So if you want to perform, you will hand them a text, because it's mostly for them, it's like text-based. They're going to go through the whole thing, and then they will let you go for your rehearsals officially. They might give you some space, depends on, you know, how established you are or famous. It's going to change. I'm not going to such details. And then there's going to be something like a kind of run-through, word by word is translated like preview. They would see that the whole production, not the whole production, because there is no set design, light design, you know, involved yet. They're going to go through it, and then if it is fine, they're going to give you the budget. You might have a short time to do design thing, and then here you are on the stage shaking with bad performances. No, I'm so sorry to say it. I mean, we have to grow up. We are adults in Iran.
Iran's law says that all men must serve in the military. What happened when it came for your time to join the military?
I mean, it was something very common, you know, in Iran. I mean, I've heard they have it even in Israel. It's a bit new to me that in Israel, you know, girls have to pass military service for 2 years, boys for 3 years. Even in Switzerland, I guess there is such a thing. So in Iran, yeah, it's just for boys. If you are like 18 and you don't go for study at university, then you have to go and pass military service, which is so common to refuse, because then you have to waste 2 years of your life, which I did.
So you refused.
Yeah.
Did that make it difficult for you to get a passport after that?
Yeah, I mean, that's like kind of guarantee for the whole thing. If you don't pass military service, then you don't obtain, you know, to have it, to get your passport.
The origin of White Rabbit, Red Rabbit, you say it came from a nightmare you had years and years ago. What happened in that nightmare?
Right now, I guess it was like 8 years ago. I was in my parents' house, and then I had this nightmare. I mean, I guess your audience could see the place you are sitting here. It was like close, similar to here, with all these, you know, computers, and then I could, you know, do lights myself. And then I was just so straight. I had a glass of water with me, which I knew it was like poison, really. And then there were my parents and my close friends in the audience. I was just staring, you know, at my mom's beautiful eyes. And I was just telling her, okay, tonight I'm going to commit suicide on the stage. And you, Mom, I mean, you gave me birth. You know, I'm so serious and silly to do it, to prove, you know, what I want to prove. Which was like, I mean, at the moment it was like, I was really scared, I guess, when I woke up. And then I started to do the very first draft of White Rabbit, Red Rabbit.
So you had a nightmare where you drank poison on stage.
I didn't drink it, but I was just trying to convince everybody that I'm going to do it.
And how did you feel in the dream at that moment? Were you frightened of what you were about to do?
No. When I woke up, yeah, I was like freaked out. But no, in the dream, I was so straight, so confident. And yeah, I was just telling that I'm going to do it.
It's like a classic anxiety dream. You know what I mean by that? An anxiety dream? See, what you did to me in a way was like an anxiety dream.
Really, was it?
Yeah. And can I tell you what I tweeted, you know, from backstage on Twitter? This is what I tweeted before I wrote this. Waiting backstage to perform the play White Rabbit, Red Rabbit. I will be given the script when I walk on stage alone. # anxiety dream.
Yeah.
It's like an anxiety dream, I suppose.
It's like a virus, you know.
It's like a virus.
Be careful.
So what's the connection between the dream then, your thinking after you had that dream to make you want to write the play? How did you take that idea then of the dream and put it into a play?
Well, I mean, I was so young, I was like 22, and I was so stupid to write the very first version of the dream, you know, the day after. It was like so quick to do it. So I did it, which was like the first hand draft. And then I went back to it like the next time. It was like, it took me something like a year to do the second draft. And the process, you know, was each time, you know, the idea, I kind of rewrite a play again. And it was like, I like it. And then no. And then I was just talking about it with some friends. And the idea, it was like going away. Being stronger, you know, coming back and trying to convince me, write it down. Till I've met this Canadian friend, Daniel Brooks, who is like, I mean, a close friend of mine. I really kind of like him, and he's really smart.
When you say friend, how could you have a... You couldn't go to Canada, could you?
Yeah, he did. He came. He came to Iran twice.
He came to Iran to see
you. He was like an adjudicator for Fajr Theatre Festival the first time, and I was like his translator.
So why did you choose to write it in English instead of Persian?
Oh, really, really strange. Somehow it was maybe because I was exhausted as a poet to write in Persian. I was disappointed to perform my play in Iran. And then I mean, writing for me is somehow learning something. And I was really happy to learn English. And then I was envy, you know, because Daniel could do it. And then because he encouraged me to do it, he told me, yeah, just go on. I mean, go on, write it down. You can ask simply for a proofread. I'm going to do it for you for free. And he's, you know, a good writer. So, yeah, I did it.
So you wrote it like a message in a bottle then from Iran to the outside world. It was like putting a message inside a bottle, putting it out into the ocean and see what would happen. Tell me how it happened then. Once you'd written it and you sent it out into the world, how performances then started to happen?
Oh, it was kind of like the metaphor. I didn't think of it like, you know, message in the bottle, but I kind of like it. So I take it. And then I tell you, I did it. It was like at the beginning, I've sent it to a festival in New York. And I've just told them, I don't need any money. You don't need, you know, I mean, it's not, you don't need even to pay for accommodation or travel tickets for anybody. Even your actors, I guess, they would be happy to do it, you know, for free, maybe. I don't know if you received any money or not. We're not talking about it here. So, they said, yeah, we're going to go and read it. And then I was just Googling my name. I'm kind of, you know, Google addict. So, and suddenly it was like, oh, Off-Broadway, Nassim Soleimanpour, White Rabbit, Red Rabbit. And it was like, oh, what's going on? That was like the beginning, the whole thing. And if you want me to tell you what is the end right now, because it's not done yet, hopefully, I found a bottle myself. You know, I was just walking, you know, in your beautiful coast, and then I saw this bottle, and then I just took it, and there was a message inside, and it was, "Hello, I'm Nassim Soleimanpour," because I found myself in my audience, interrupting my own show, going to the stage. And drinking, you know, water with you.
It's been performed in Edinburgh, the Edinburgh Fringe. It won
awards.
Twice. It won awards there.
Yeah, it was nominated for 3 awards.
And it's performed in Canada. It's been performed in many places now.
Yeah.
During the course of the play, in the script, I was reading out your email address to members of the audience, and you wanted people in the audience to send you emails, to send you messages about the program. What kind of messages have you received?
Oh, the most beautiful. I mean, I'm so lucky to receive, you know, those emails. It's like people from all around the world. You know, you're just sitting, you know, in Iran, and then somebody says from Brazil, I mean, with like, hello, Brazil, no good English, Nassim, Rabat, love. And it's like, oh, what's going on here, you know? It's sometimes even hard to take all these emotions inside you.
As we mentioned, it came out of a dream about committing suicide on stage. No one knows this until they perform this. Has that affected some of the performers of the play?
To cry on the stage?
Yeah,
it did a lot. It did a lot. I mean, it's like really weird. I receive emails from producers because I've just, you know, tell, you know, my email address in the play. So sometimes they approach me in person, which is a bit weird right now because I have my agent. And then actors, they write to me. They say, I did your show. I'm so proud, or I'm so, you know, into it yet. I'm just digesting the whole thing, or anything. They reveal me like a secret. Like, I had this beautiful email of somebody telling me that I don't know if it was beautiful. I have cancer, and I didn't tell anybody, but I thought I have to tell you. He was one of my audience. He was like a professional, you know, actor. So it's like...
Oh, man, what do you say back?
I don't think so that he's going to hear my voice. I wish he does, you know. But it's like, it was the only email that I didn't answer. It was like 4 months ago, and I'm still, you know, thinking, am I the right guy to answer him? What should I tell him? I mean, it's like too much.
Seems so much of your play seems to be about control and obedience. And right at the start of the play, you're addressing the audience directly through me. And you say, you give me lines to read, which is saying, this is Nassim Suleimanpour talking to you now. And the person reading these lines is the actor, the performer. These are my words. I'm speaking to you directly. I don't know. It seems you want us to think about that. You were kind of controlling me from a distance as your performer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, such things happen. I mean, look, I mean, what's going on here? I mean, we've just switched. You sat over there, you're asking me a question. You can tell me, okay, that's done, time is up. So that's, I mean, I would love to do it vice versa and tell you was the actor. I mean, you were the actor. And so let's switch. I can interview you and ask you questions.
So, Nassim, the tables are turned, it seems, on this occasion here. Maybe that's why I brought you in, I don't know. I felt I had to trust you, though. I had to trust you and to accept my fear, accept a degree of fear and uncertainty. Was I trusting you or was I obeying you?
You know, there is this moment when I tell the actor that, okay, the whole story, I mean, the whole secret is revealed, you know, it's poison. And then are you going to drink the poison? And then there is something like a kind of, you know, silence usually. And then I say, are you reading still? Is this you want to do it? So from some point of view, yeah, you're trusting me. But somehow it's like too much. I mean, maybe you should stop. You should say, no, I'm not going to read it anymore. I will like it. I would like it. I would take it. You know, I would say, oh, what a kind of smart actor who screwed the whole show. Okay, that's fine. Nothing can happen to me, to Rabat, to him, to audience members. That's kind of experimental theater, isn't it?
It sure is. I felt I was kind of the guinea pig. You know what that means in an experiment?
Yeah.
You know, like and the audience were too. I think we all were. And the outcome wasn't certain. You were eventually you were given a passport, military service. A few months ago, a doctor found a problem with your eye.
Yeah, like eye disorder in my left eye. Half blind, I guess.
So that meant you couldn't serve in the military then.
Yeah, and fortunately.
So coming to Australia now, sitting in the audience in the powerhouse, that's the first time you've ever been present in a live performance of your own play?
It's really weird. I mean, the play is changing, you know. The first time I was scared, I couldn't stand up and introduce myself. The second time, I guess it was your show, or you were the third. So it's like each time it's changing. I don't know when I'm gonna go to stage. I don't know what I'm gonna do. And I think I'm happy to say that the whole experiment is still, you know, changing me, the actors, play, audience, which is so great. I think the play is, you know, is rewriting itself, me and everybody, which is like, it's too much.
What kind of questions do you want to ask me, speaking of turning the tables?
Oh.
Because I know you had a lot of questions. You must have questions for the people who perform your play and the decisions we make in it.
I'm going to tell you, would you like to go and see a performance of Rabbit right now as an audience?
Yes.
Then do you have the power to stand up and tell everybody that you were once the actor?
That's a really good question. Not unless I was asked to.
I was not too, but isn't it a kind of, you know, lying? You know the way the guy, you know, he would be happy to see you. You know it.
If I stood up in the performance and said, without being asked to say something. Just to volunteer. By the way, everyone, I did this performance a few nights ago.
Yeah, maybe you tell him you can go and drink it. It's safe, or don't drink it. Or I met the otter, and I think he would be happy to do it. Or anything you want. Would you do it?
No.
Why not?
No, I'm not that I wouldn't. I just wouldn't do it because as audiences, you just don't do that, do you? That's the convention, isn't it?
Which we should break. This is what I'm trying to tell you. I mean, who told me I should be so polite in a theater? You know what? I quit. You know, being an audience, because I cannot. I mean, I was here. I bet there were good performances, you know, in Powerhouse, and I didn't see any of them because I couldn't stop myself. I might easily jump into the stage and drop, you know, the beautiful and screw everything, which is not polite. But as for Rabbit, I tell you, do it.
You would like to see me, if I were there in the audience, to stand up and say...
I'm not you. I'm not going, you know... I'm trying to learn not to direct anybody.
but you are. The directions for me as performer are very specific. Are you saying I don't have to obey?
I'm saying you are not the... right now, you are not the author. You are not the actor. You are not the audience. You're something new. You've changed. And you have to think of it.
How about you? You're not the same guy who wrote the play.
I'm changing. I was walking in the streets the night before, like 11 o'clock, and I was lost. I couldn't find my accommodation. I was thinking, who am I? What's going on here? They convinced me in the talk back that I'm three persons right now, which was, I was somehow convinced. You know, Nassim in the past, who wrote a play, Nassim who is present and whom should not be in the audience, and Nassim who revealed, you know, his secret and stood up and talked, which is like, oh, what's going on?
On stage afterwards, you said that there is a Persian word that you use.
Taruf,
for a certain way of speaking. It's one of those words that I don't know if it translates easily into English, but can you have a try at explaining what taruf means?
Oh, it's hard to understand it, I guess, even if I can explain it. But it's like me and you tell me, okay, I kind of like the play. And then I'm going to say, so you liked it? And I know you didn't like it. And then you're going to insist and say, yeah, I liked it. And then I say, so you liked it. And then you're going to say, yeah, I liked it. So we both, you know, we both maybe lie, and we both know that we're doing that, but we do it.
So we're being
polite.
Polite.
In a way.
But we're lying. We're lying
somehow,
politely.
This is what we do to theater, you know?
And is that a bad thing?
To theater?
No. Just to lie politely to one another.
I don't vote for that. I mean, I don't like it. I can be quiet, which I hate it too. But yeah, lying is not a good thing.
It's been performed in New York, London, all over the world, San Francisco, Canada, Brazil. You might be the most well-known Iranian playwright in the world right now. Are you well-known in Iran?
No.
Do you like it that way?
Kind of, yes. I mean, Rabbit would have another kind of travel, which is travel in time. It's like really weird if I die like in 40 years and then people, you know, decide to perform Rabbit and then somebody in the past manipulate them and tell them a story of a guy in Iran who had been filtered in Facebook.
This seems to be my point. You're an amazing guy, and I think your play is extraordinary, and I'd urge anyone who could get to go and see it should go and see it. Thank you so much, and hope you have a lovely time while you're here in Australia.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to a podcast of Conversations with Richard Feidler. For more information and interviews, visit abc.net.au/conversations.